following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939. This is the Financial Sense News Hour.
Well, what a week it was for the markets this week. All kinds of things going on around the globe, including missile strikes against U.S. forces in the Middle East. On Tuesday, the price of oil jumped over $60 a barrel, getting up to $66, and for a brief moment, gold was over $1,600. But the markets seemed to shrug it off, because by the end of the week, markets were in record territory, with the NASDAQ over 9,000, and for a brief moment on Friday, the Dow touched 29,000. Hi everyone, I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's a special edition, as we are going to be looking at Forecast 2020. We're going to take a look at what the consensus view is on the stock market, the economy, interest rates, the employment rate, and then we're going to look outside the box. What are those things and surprises that some people are thinking about that the markets may be ignoring? That'll be coming up later on in the show with Chris Sheridan and myself, and this show's opening will be with Justine Hall. All of that coming up in just a moment.
The first full week of 2020 was certainly action-packed. Stocks slipped slightly on Friday following data from the U.S. Labor Department showing job and wage growth was weaker than expected in December, though the Dow briefly topped 29,000 for the first time this week, with all three major benchmarks setting new intraday highs Friday. The Labor Department said the U.S. economy added 145,000 new jobs in December, though that was below the 165,000 estimate and the 266,000 gain in November. The unemployment rate held steady near a 50-year low of 3.5%, but there is some concern around the slowing pace of wage growth in the U.S. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran also dominated headlines after the U.S. killed top Iranian military commander General Soleimani last week. Iran said it had concluded proportionate measures against the U.S. by firing missiles at two Iraqi military bases that house American troops on Wednesday. No one was killed or injured in those strikes. On Thursday, intelligence officials said they believed missiles fired by the Iranian military, though most likely in air, were responsible for downing the Ukrainian passenger jet that had crashed shortly after it took off in Iran, killing all 176 people on board. The Trump administration placed another round of sanctions on Iran on Friday, applying to industries including steel, construction, mining, and textiles, as well as to eight senior officials believed by the U.S. to have had a role in the missile strikes. Iran is already under heavy sanctions from the U.S., and this new round isn't likely to have any major economic effect. But analysts say it could help deter investment from countries including Russia and China. Next week is poised to be a big week for trade, with a Chinese delegation expected to arrive in Washington on Monday to complete a Phase 1 trade agreement with the U.S., keeping with the January 15th signing date Trump announced in a tweet on December 31st. After seemingly endless Brexit drama, British lawmakers approved legislation this week to withdraw from the European Union at the end of the month. And this week, Trump proposed stark changes to the U.S.'s oldest environmental regulations that could exempt major infrastructure projects from review. And finally, Tesla shares soared 17% on Thursday after surprising Wall Street with a third quarter profit amid doubts about the electric car maker's long-term prospects. Tesla's market capitalization hit $53 billion, surpassing both Ford and General Motors, making Tesla the number one U.S. car company. And that's what moved the markets this week.
Last year, we aired a very timely interview with Adam Rosenzweig, the managing partner at Gehring and Rosenzweig, regarding their outlook that shale productivity was going to slow quite dramatically. We got an update from him on FS Insider to talk about how he expects this to slow even further in 2020, what that means for oil prices, and we also got an update from him on a wide range of different commodities. Here's a clip of what he had to say in this interview.
So if you look from, you know, December 31st to October 31st, you're talking about growth that is just under 600,000 barrels a day. So like I said, it still is growing. The shales are still growing, but that is about 60%, a little over 60% slower growth than we saw from the December 31st to October 31st period, 2018. So the second derivative has turned sharply negative. Shales are growing, but they're decelerating at a very, very, very fast rate. And that deceleration is actually about to get much, much worse here as we move into 2020.
So if you want to hear this full interview with Adam, where we discuss crude, natural gas, copper, uranium, gold, and his general outlook for the commodity space in 2020, you definitely want to hear what he has to say. If you want to listen to this full interview, all you have to do is go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Did you know that municipal bonds can provide you with a predictable source of income that is free from both federal and state income taxes? If you're in a high tax bracket, municipal bonds could be the right investment choice for you. If you have more than $500,000 to invest, our portfolio managers can create a municipal bond portfolio designed to align with your financial goals. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management at 888-486-3939 now and add tax-free bonds to your portfolio. That's 888-486-3939 or email us at grow@financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Happy New Year, everyone. We're going to start off this big picture, as we do every year, talking about the forecast for 2020, looking at what the consensus thinks is going to happen this year. And obviously, as many of you know, it's not just the beginning of a new year, it's also the beginning of a brand new decade. But Jim, let's start off with some of the changes. The first one being that I'm obviously filling in for Chris Prytower today, but let's talk about some of the other changes that we've made recently and that we're also going to be making to the show this year.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to be doing in 2020 is we're going to be sharing some of the research that we do here internally at Financial Sense Advisors, and we're going to be introducing a segment with my son, Chris Poplava, who's Chief Investment Officer, and it's going to be called Smart Macro. So about every other week, we'll be sharing with you a lot of the research we're doing internally here, and then, of course, I'll continue in between then to do the big picture. We also want to introduce a greater variety of experts. One of the inputs and a lot of the feedback that we've gotten a lot from many of you, our listeners, is you like the varied opinions, whether it's the different technicians we have on the program or some of the different experts. So we're going to expand upon that in 2020 to bring more information to you. We want to give you every single week an encapsulated global view of markets.
So Jim, let's start things off with some of the major forecasts that people are making on the consensus side, given the research that you're looking at today.
The consensus forecast for GDP is 1.8%, so just slightly below 2%, but still a growing economy. And for 2021, they're expecting it to tick up just slightly, 1.9%, perhaps after the election's over, maybe more stimulus. But right now, a little bit of a slowdown for the economy, but no recession in sight either this year or next year. So that's probably good news, Chris, for the markets themselves, because some of the things that shook the markets this week, the things that happened in Iran, those kind of events can be shrugged off much easier when you're in an economic expansion. They don't get shrugged off as easy when the economy is in recession and contraction. So right off the bat, some good news on the economy. I find it very hard to find anybody that sees any kind of a recession. We'll get into that later on. Now, let's talk about some of the things that have been absent in this recovery, and that is private investment. Now, remember the tax reform that was put into place in 2018 that was put in with lower corporate tax rates, which is worth the majority of the tax cuts went, it was hoped that business investment would increase. And it did slightly for 2018. Business investment, private investment was up year over year by 5%. But in 2019, it fell back to 2.2%. and this year expected to drop below 1%. So if you're looking at this economic expansion, and we'll talk, I'm sure, later on in this year, it's really resting on government and consumers because consumption makes up about 70% of GDP.
Now, Jim, what about some of the other things like inflation? If we look at the consumer price index, housing, unemployment rates, because we just spoke with Jim Paulson on our FS Insider program, and he was talking about last year, a three-gun gooser that would boost the markets, goose the markets higher. He was obviously correct in his view. And when we got an update from him, he was saying that the big thing that would derail the bull market at this point, which he thinks we may see towards the end of 2020, is a pickup in inflation and a pickup in bond yields. And that was the third of those three guns that he was looking at, was low bond yields stimulating the economy. So what's the consensus forecast when we think about inflation for this year?
You know, if we take a look at inflation, Chris, it's expected to be a little bit higher. We're slightly below 2% for 2019, 1.8. It's expected to tick up to 2.1%. And that is one of the real wild cards. And we'll get into that later on. But the consensus is 2.1%. And there was a key comment that was made by Chairman Powell. I believe it was in the September or October FOMC meeting. And this is really key to understand what the Fed may be doing here. Powell said the hurdle to raise interest rates on inflation is going to have to be much, much harder and higher. So in other words, the Fed is saying they're willing to tolerate a higher inflation rate than what has gone on in the past. Their target is about 2%. They really haven't hit that. They hit it once in 2017, and they hit it a little bit in 2018. But most of the time, our CPI has been below their target rate of 2%. This year, the consensus forecast, it's up to 2.1, dropping to 2% in 2021. So one of the surprises, as Jim's talking about, could be an uptick. And we'll talk about, when we get into our own forecast, what we think may be the uptick that could cause inflation to run higher. But right now, 2.1%, not really much of an increase in inflation, and certainly tolerable from the viewpoint of the Federal Reserve. Core CPI is expected to tick up to 1.9%. Now, let's move on to some of the other things. We've seen the Fed cut interest rates three times, and one sector of the economy that is still holding up, and obviously with lower mortgage rates, is housing. Housing starts are expected to tick up slightly to 1,292,000. That's up roughly about 30,000 more from 2019. New home sales are expected to pick up slightly by about 15,000. Existing home sales are expected to tick up in building permits. So obviously lower interest rates. I was just talking to a client who is refinancing their home. They're basically going to get a five-year ARM because in 5 years, they plan on retiring and then moving elsewhere. But Chris, they were able to get a 3% mortgage. I'd go back to probably the 60s when you ever saw a 3% mortgage rate. So housing is expected to be strong. Let's get to some of the other figures that they're talking about here. Hourly earnings. Now, why this is key is in the last couple of years, of course, the president is taking credit for this, but wage and hourly earnings are finally starting to tick up after a decade of stagnation. In 2018, hourly earnings were up 3.3%. They're expected to go up 3.1% in 2020. Now, why that's important? There's two things that are happening here for the consumer. Number one, we'll get to this in just a moment, is the unemployment rate is the best it's been in nearly half a century. Hourly earnings are going up. They're starting to rise again for the first time in a decade. That's helping consumer confidence. And a lot of the forecasts that you're seeing from Wall Street, a lot of the big economic houses are basing their forecasts for 2020 on the strength of the consumer and the strength of government spending. Because one of the things they did in the budget deal is putting that budget deal together as they did in the month of December. And by the way, if you live in the U.S., there was a major, major tax law change affecting estates and pension plans that went into effect beginning this year. They snuck that in at the last hour on December 23rd, and we're going to lay out all those details on next week's program. But anyway, government spending is going up. So if you want to look at the economy this year, the strength is not going to come from investment or corporations. It's going to come from consumer spending and government spending, which is what will be driving the economy. Now, the budget deficit last year, we hit close to $1 trillion in 2019. We're expected to exceed over $1 trillion in 2020. The budget deficit is expected to rise to nearly 5% of GDP. Now, what makes that remarkable, folks, is remember, we're still in a growing economy. We're not in a recession yet. And we're using additional government spending, lower interest rates, and tax stimulus to keep this economy going. So the unemployment rate, which is another key factor here, is expected to remain low in the 3.5% to 3.6% range. It's expected to tick up to 3.7% in 2021. So nobody's expecting a recession. That would kind of line up, because if you were going to expect a recession, you would expect to see the unemployment rate start to rise. And we just simply aren't seeing that.
Now, Jim, let's talk about what the Fed is expected to do. I'm looking at CME Group's Fed Funds Watch. It looks like there's no expected Fed cuts or raises for most of 2020. So what is the consensus expecting? Is that basically the same message there?
Same message there. Nobody's expecting. Basically, the view is the Fed will stand down. In fact, recent comments, they're happy with the way things look. They're happy with the three rate cuts. They feel that that was enough stimulus. And then you kind of remember, they're putting adding $60 billion into the repo market every single month. And that's going to continue on to the second quarter of this year. But nobody's expecting the Fed to do anything. Of course, as you know, Chris, if anything changes, either on the trade front, we start getting some bad economic numbers, that can change on a dime, as proven in January of last year, when the Fed did a complete 180 in a matter of weeks after the disastrous outcome in the fourth quarter of 2018. So no expectations for any rate hikes, no expectations for any rate cuts. However, there is an expectation as we get into next year to see the 10-year note gradually begin to tick up. Right now, the expectations are is we end up the year at 1.9, close to 2%. And that's another unknown. Right now, everybody's expecting, you know, even at 1.9%, if you compare that to expectations for Europe, German interest rates are expected to remain negative by almost 0.4%. United Kingdom rates are expected to be below 1%. So Europe is dealing with negative interest rates. So almost a 2% yield on treasuries is enough reason for a lot of money coming into the U.S., although we'll have to talk next week when we talk about the dollar. So right now, Chris, I would say when you look at the economy, everybody's expecting what happened last year to continue, a bit of a slowdown. In fact, if you're looking for an increase in economic growth, more of those expectations are expected to happen overseas. Europe is expected to pick up. China is expected to stay within a range. And then also there's problems in Japan. However, emerging market growth is expected to do much better in 2020 than it did in 2019. So if you're looking for a real major increase in economic growth, a lot of that increase will be coming from overseas. However, the U.S. is still the best looking shirt in a dirty laundry basket.
And when it comes to that point, we at Financial Sense Wealth Management have been increasingly allocating a larger portion of client portfolios to international emerging market stocks, as we believe that that area is going to continue to outperform the U.S. So that is something that we'll be continuing to discuss on our program and track going forward. Jim, let's talk about where we're at in the cycle. This has now become the longest cycle on record. We're going to be at 11 years of an economic expansion as of 2020. So we are getting longer and longer. Where are you at now with this conversation about the longevity of this current cycle? Are we just in extra innings now?
Yeah, it's kind of like overtime in a football game. And it really began with the Trump tax stimulus that went into effect. When you think about it, what, $1.5 trillion of a tax stimulus? And Chris, that made it unusual in the sense that it was coming at the end of a business cycle. Normally, You see something like that, for example, with George W. Bush. He did that coming out of the 2001 recession. They lowered tax rates in 2001 and once again in 2003. Then the other thing that made all of this unusual is that as the government was pushing a tax stimulus, as they were in 2018, the Fed was aggressively raising interest rates. They raised interest rates 4 times, almost counteracting. That in itself was unusual. But then they did their 180, cut rates 3 times. They shrunk their balance sheet by $600 billion. And by the time we get to the summer of this year, they will have added $600 billion back to their balance sheet. So we're getting this economic stimulus. And let's not forget, it just wasn't the tax cuts. In 2018, government spending, they increased government spending by $300 billion. They upped that again by another $300 billion. So we're constantly injecting this infusion, whether it's fiscal stimulus or monetary stimulus, we're getting both. So it's no wonder that we're going into overtime. And that's what I would say. Some people are saying, well, this is just a mid-cycle slowdown. And as some economists would argue, there is no really defined cycle. In other words, well, the business expansion lasts 4 or 5 years as it did in the 60s and 70s, and then you get a recession, then you get a recovery. If you take a look at the Reagan recovery, it lasted from 81 to 91, almost 10 years. And then we had 91 to 2001, that was 10 years. And here we are, 2009 to 2020. So I would say the analogy I would use, we're in overtime.
Let's jump into some of the stock market predictions. I know that you have broken it down. When you take the entire consensus and all the different people, what they're predicting, looking at the mean, median, high, and low. So give us a breakdown of those numbers.
Okay. If we take a look at, and these are probably the top 10, 15 investment houses as surveyed by Bloomberg. The mean is 3,280. And if you look at that, we're at 3,272. So that really isn't much. The median is 3,300. The high is 3,425. And the low is 3,000. So we do have a couple bears out there. Francois Trahan from UBS is bearish. He thinks we end up the year at 3,000. We'll have more to say about that next week. Societe Generale is bearish. They're at 3,050. Morgan Stanley, of course, they've been bearish the last couple of years. They're bearish. They think we end up at 3,000. On the high side is Evercore, Goldman Sachs at 3,400. And I might add Craig Johnson, who sees the S&P at 3,600. So if you look at this, nobody's expecting a bear market, which would be hard to perceive unless the Fed made a policy mistake. Let's say we had a jump in inflation due to oil prices in a short period of time. Inflation ticks up and all of a sudden the Fed gets hawkish, as they did in 2018. But outside that, the problem is, Chris, earnings aren't growing. Actually, year over year, they were basically flat or down for 2019. You know, the people that are bullish are forecasting earnings for the S&P at close to 178. Goldman Sachs is at 174. Jefferies is at 176. So just a slight increase in corporate earnings for the year, which means if the stock market is probably going to head higher, it's going to be an expansion of earnings multiple. If you take a look at 2019, fabulous year for the stock market, but it wasn't driven by corporate earnings. It was driven by liquidity, rate cuts, and an expansion of the PE multiple. Simply put, with interest rates dropping, it's hard to believe we ended 2018 at 3.25 on the 10-year treasury. And in August, we almost got down to 1.4%. So interest rates almost dropped by 50%. And as a result of that, people were willing to pay more for earnings on the S&P. The PE multiple expanded, which is what drove the big increase that we saw in stocks last year.
It sounds like Craig Johnson, who we've had on our show multiple times, you've nicknamed him Bullseye Craig Johnson just because of how accurate he's been with his year-end targets on the S&P 500. You said he's the most bullish out of the analysts that you were looking at. I suppose you're going to have to ask him what gives him such conviction to be at 3,600 on the S&P by year-end 2020.
Yeah, there's a number of things he's looking at. He's looking at presidential cycle. He's looking at a favorable backdrop, as some of the many strategists that have talked about. You know, the Fed is definitely on a stand down for 2020, and that's good because nobody wants to see interest rates rise. And the fact that they're injecting liquidity into this market to the tune of $60 billion. And now they're going to do that to the second quarter of this year. And then what happens after that really is going to depend on what the economy looks like. And so as we had Danielle DiMartino on this program, she corrected me. I said, you know, the Fed's kind of reluctant to make anything drastic in election year. And she pointed out that's not necessarily true. They've done it in the past. But anyway, at least for the first half of the year, things look good. And then when we get to our own forecast, I think this is going to be like a football game. I think the first half looks pretty good. I think we have trouble in the third quarter, and maybe we end up on a very, very positive note, depending on the election outcome in the fourth quarter, or we head straight down into a bear market and recession. So a lot of wild cards, but for the most part, we'll have Craig on the program. We'll let him tell the story. We're going to do an extensive interview with him because, once again, on Wall Street, he's a guy that stands out. And when Craig says a number, I pay a lot of attention to it because he's been fairly accurate. In fact, uncannily accurate in some of his calls that he's made. And he'll be on the program. But I would say right now, Chris, everybody expects a slight uptick, anywhere from 4 to 6, maybe 8% gains for a total return for the S&P this year if you throw in the dividends.
Well, as you mentioned, there are some wild cards that could take place to throw some of these numbers out of whack. I mean, a big one is the 2020 elections, right? We could see a very big change in fiscal policy that could engender a lot of uncertainty into businesses, into tax policy. I mean, there are so many implications. So let's talk about some of those wild cards, starting with the 2020 elections.
Yeah, I would say the 2020 elections is probably the biggest wild card because you have two opposing economic philosophies, capitalism, free markets versus socialism. Obviously, there's different outcomes for that. There's, the idea that they would ban fracking, which, you know, would have a major impact on U.S. energy production and also on the price of oil. Major tax cuts, whether it's income taxes, a tax on assets for the first time. There is just all kinds of stuff coming out there. Now, right now, the market isn't really paying attention to anything that's happening on the election front. And I don't suspect that will happen, Chris, until we get into the third quarter when we actually know who the nominee for the Democrat Party is going to be. It could be a wild thing at the convention. You could have basically not a write-in, but a convention battle. You've got Mike Bloomberg, who's worth over $50 billion, and he is spending a wad of money. I mean, he's spending more money than any of the candidates so far. Could Bloomberg be the candidate? Could it be Biden? Could it be Sanders? Could it be Warren? But we're basically boiling it down to four candidates right now. Biden in the polls is up. Behind him, coming back up strong again, is Bernie Sanders. Then we have Elizabeth Warren. And then now we have also Michael Bloomberg, who's spending a fortune, and he's coming up in the polls. And so I think a lot of turbulence will come in the third quarter. And of course, based on the outcome of what happens in November, will determine how we finish the year. So that's a wild card, in my opinion, number one.
Speaking of another wild card, Jim, I mean, obviously, we just saw this recently within the past week, a U.S. airstrike on Iran, one of Iran's top commanders. That was a pretty big wild card. And, you know, it kind of came out of the blue. Obviously, that raised a bunch of fears by people that we could be entering into a new war in the Middle East, fears over Iran retaliation, which thankfully appeared not to be as big as was feared. And it seems, at least for the time being, that tensions have subdued a little bit. So that's good. But of course, anything could happen on the geopolitical side.
It was amazing, Chris. Tuesday, I'm sitting on my treadmill and I'm watching the news, and all of a sudden, headline breaking news, Iran missile strikes. And of course, when the news first comes out, we don't have clarity. We don't have any detail. They're just showing these rockets hitting the bases. And then there was rumors the president was going to address the nation. People were talking about a massive retaliation. We moved, I think it was about 6 or 8 B-52s. And the thing about B-52 bombers, they don't have to come anywhere near the target. They can carry 20 cruise missiles with precision accuracy. We had politicians talking about, you don't want to be an Iraqi refinery worker. I mean, it was just going crazy Tuesday night. We had gold touching over $1,600 an ounce. You had oil briefly over 70. And of course, the next day, it de-escalates. So those are the kind of things. Personally, I don't think the president would want to have a conflict with Iran. The last thing he would want to do is go into November with oil prices spiked up in the $80, $90, or $100 range. And nor do I believe Iran, which is hurting economically, would want to take on the U.S. military. They would be pulverized. So it's in neither party's interest to escalate this. So I think it's more likely we'll see some form of de-escalation. If there isn't any further attacks, it may be through proxies. But the president has drawn a red line, and from the stuff that we got in terms of communication with the Swiss embassy, they immediately after the strike, in fact, we even got warnings the strikes were coming. So, but once again, this is something that appears out of the blue, and these are the things you can't predict. The other thing also here is the trade war, which obviously is impacting investment confidence. One of the big unknowns right now is manufacturing has been contracting with the ISM. The ISM manufacturing index, the service index is doing well. And some people some of the strategists are expecting a rebound in manufacturing in the second part of this year, which can help the economy. So, Chris, those are some of the wild cards out there. And, you know, how do you predict what happened on Tuesday or what happened on last Friday? You simply can't. But I would say this, it's in neither party's interest, whether it's a full-fledged, blown-out trade war or it's a war in the Middle East. It's in neither party's interest to do that, whether on China, on a full-blown trade war, or a war with Iran.
Well, for the next 12 months, I think the market is in pretty good shape. It is not overvalued at these interest rates. So I think it still has room to go higher.
Journal today argues that the new normal, maybe 19 times, 19 and a half times is the new normal. What do you think that number really should be?
Well, I think the market could sell it 20 times. Remember, you know, stocks are related to interest rates. They compete with bonds. And with rates below 2%, a 20 multiple could certainly be supported.
So that was Byron Wien, and obviously he gave his outlook on the market for 2020. We're going to cover some of the outside-of-the-box forecasts that are being made by Saxo Bank and others. Jim, why don't you kick things off and tell us what some of these people are forecasting when we think about 2020?
All right, let's begin as we always do with Byron Wien. He's known for this. Every year he comes out with what he calls his 10 surprises. Before we get to 2020, let's take a look at how well he did for 2019. His surprises, 2019, the weakening world economy encourages the Federal Reserve to stop raising the Fed funds rate during the year, and inflation remains subdued, and the 10-year stays below 3.5%. I'll give him a plus on that. The economy did weaken. The Fed stopped raising rates. In fact, they cut interest rates. Partly because of no further increases by the Federal Reserve, the S&P gains 15% for the year. Well, he got that sort of right. It was probably closer to 25. His third prediction, traditional drivers of GDP growth, capital spending, and housing make only modest gains in 2019. He got that right. The better tone in the financial markets discourages precious metals. Gold drops to 1,000. Boy, did he get that one wrong.
That one didn't happen.
No. In fact, we almost hit 1,600 on Tuesday. The profit outlook for emerging market brightens. He got that right. March 29th comes and goes, and there's no Brexit deal. He got that one right, although they're expecting that to happen this year. Seven, the dollar stabilizes at year-end 2018 levels, although it's been coming down. I'll give him a positive on that. Number eight, The Mueller investigation results in indictments against members of the Trump Organization closest to the president. Well, there were a couple of people indicted, but they weren't indicted for anything to do with the election or anything else. It was more of a tax fraud and lying. So he got that one wrong. 9, Congress, with the Democratic majority, gets a whole bunch of stuff done. Well, the only thing they got done was impeachment. So I'll give him a minus on that. Growth stocks continue to provide leadership in the U.S. equity markets. You know, technology stocks, that was one of the anomalies that we saw pretty much in the markets last year, all the way up to September. It was really a safety trade up until September. You had staples, consumer staples leading the market. You had REITs and you had utilities. Then the anomaly was technology. Technology performed well throughout the whole year. So I'm going to give him a plus on that. Now, let's get to 2020. His prediction number 1, the economy disappoints the consensus forecast. Fed Chairman Powell lowers the Fed funds rate to 1%, and the president cuts payroll taxes. Now, I think that could happen as we get closer to the election. That's one thing the president can do to stimulate the economy. For the Fed to cut interest rates down to 1%, that would really indicate a major slowdown. So prediction number 1, the economy slows and the Fed cuts interest rates rather than stands down. Number 2, concepts of inequality and climate change dominate the elections. Enough information is revealed to cause some of the supporters, as well as many of the independents, to throw support to liberal candidates in 2020 state races, and the Democrats recapture the Senate. So they hold on to the House, and now they control Congress again, as they did in 2016. Prediction number 3, there is no comprehensive phase 2 trade deal that limits China's ability. The U.S. and China keep a hands-off in Hong Kong. Number 4, the prospect of a self-driving car is pushed further into the future. A series of accidents with experimental vehicles causes a major manufacturer or technology company to issue a statement. They're no longer developing self-driving cars. I don't know about you, Chris. I feel kind of funny getting on in a car with no driver, or just, you know, I don't think many of our listeners would feel very comfortable getting on an airplane that didn't have pilots on it. So I don't know. He could be right there. Number 5. Emboldened by the pain of economic sanctions, Iran capitalizes on a lack of American leadership. The Straits of Hormuz are closed and the price of oil spikes over $70 a barrel. So he's going against the consensus that it's in neither party's interest to do this. Number 6, even though some observers believe valuations are stretched, the S&P 500 goes to over 3,500 at some point in the year. Number 7, big tech stocks face growing political scrutiny. The FANG stocks underperform. So we're looking at Apple, which just hit a new high on the day we're doing this program. So he's saying that basically with the anti-sentiment coming from the Democrats, especially Elizabeth Warren, who vows to break up, you know, companies like Amazon, Google, that they underperform the rest of the market. Number 8, having secured a workable Brexit deal, this is funny because this is opposite of last year, that the United Kingdom turns out to be actually do quite well as a result of its divorce from the European Union. Number 9, U.S. bond bubble starts to leak with negative rates continuing abroad, but the U.S. 10-year Treasury note hits 2.5%. So this is kind of interesting, Chris, because there he's saying the economy is going to weaken, but rates will rise, and that's probably due to the deficit. And that would also have to depend on what's happening overseas. Finally, number 10, the problems with Boeing 737 MAX are fixed and deliveries begin. The plane becomes a future around the world and a standard. Some of his also-rans are fears of an economic crisis in India, ameliorate. Number 12, artificial intelligence begins to be viewed as a paper tiger. Number 13, economic problems in Russia intensify, even though the price of oil rises. And let me see, he's got populism and inward thinking continues to spread around the globe. And 15, North Korea agrees to suspend its nuclear program. So those are his predictions. Basically, a slowdown in the economy, a rise in the market to record levels, pretty high up there. He's up there close to Craig Johnson at 3,500. But, you know, one of his caveats on that 3,500, sometime in the year. And it's basically, if we're going to hit those higher numbers, it's going to happen in the first half of the year, or it's going to happen in the final months of the year based on the outcome of the presidential election. So that's pretty much Byron Wien's predictions for the year. I want to get to Saxo Bank. And the only reason I like taking a look at these guys, they have such outside-the-wall thinking sometimes. Every once in a while, they get one of them right. But I'm not going to look at their 2019 because basically the bulk of them never came place or took place. But let's take a look at what they're predicting. And they don't call them predictions. They call them outrageous predictions. And some of these, when I read them, are going to sound like that. Number one, chips go cold in an AI winter. Diminishing returns on chip applications see the SOX index, the semiconductor stocks collapse by 50%. So he's sort of going along with
Byron Wien. Yeah, we have seen AI winters in the past too. I think it was in the 70s or the 80s following a big retrenchment by the U.S. government and spending into that area. So it's happened before. It could happen again.
Yeah, their number two prediction, stagflation hits the U.S., low economic growth with rising inflation. Number three, boy, this would be a 180 pivot. The ECB folds and begins hiking interest rates. And number four, in energy, green is not the new black. The ratio of fossil fuel renewable energy jumps from 7 to 12. The oil and gas industry came roaring out of the financial crisis after 2009, returning some 131%. So they're basically clean energy industry will suffer a wake-up call. In other words, fossil fuels are going to be with us for some time to come. That's one I can agree with. South Africa electrocuted by Eskom debt. It overwhelms the country as debt has more than doubled to a period of over 50% of GDP. Now, here is one. Number six, U.S. President Trump announces America's first tax to reduce the trade deficit. A tax on all foreign-derived revenue scrambles supply lines and spikes inflation. Well, that's out of the box. Sweden breaks bad is their number seven prediction. A massive and pragmatic attitude shift washes over Sweden as it gets to work to better integrate its immigrants and overstretch social services. Number eight, this is a wild one. Democrats win a clean sweep in the U.S. 2020 election. They retake the White House, they retake the Senate, and they win the popular vote by almost 20 million as millennials and Gen Z turn the tide for the Democrats. And that would be probably suggesting maybe a Bernie Sanders. Also, the Democrats pass Medicare for All, and they restrict drug pricing, bringing a massive haircut to the industry's profitability. Number nine, Hungary leaves the EU. And number 10, Asia launches a new reserve currency to move away from the U.S. dollar. So kind of really way out there. Every once in a while, some of those things happen. So that's why we include them, because every once in a while, when something out of the box happens, people think, who ever would have thought something like that happened? Well, sometimes you'll find one of those outrageous predictions actually come true. The final one I want to throw, and this is sort of a consensus type forecast, but we throw them in there because last year they were fairly accurate. They got 8 out of their 10 predictions, and that is IHS Market. Their predictions for the year, number one, U.S. GDP grows at 2%. Consumer spending grows at 2.7%. Once again, sort of that consensus thinking that we're going to hit 2% or less, and the consumer is going to drive it. Number two, European growth stabilizes up slightly as the PMIs bottomed. Number three, Japanese growth slows because of the increase in the sales tax. That's more likely. Number four, Chinese growth slows to below 6%, and labor productivity slows as a result of various aging of the population and the trade war with the U.S. Number five, emerging markets tread water and as a result of things going on with China. Number six, commodity prices fall 3.5%. So some opposite thinking there. 7, no increase in inflation. It's muted as a result of dropping commodity prices and slower economic growth. 8, the easing cycle by central banks comes to a complete end. 9, the dollar appreciates even more as the fundamentals in the U.S. look even better. And 10, no recession likely in 2020. Their prediction, the odds of a recession have dropped from 1 out of 3 to 1 in 5 outside a trade policy mistake. So that, Chris, pretty much sums it up of kind of outside the box thinking. Some of the things that really stood out to me is a complete takeover of the election by the Democrats. In other words, they retake the Senate, which is one of Byron Wayne's predictions, and they capture the White House, pass Medicare for All, and slash and control drug prices. So those are a couple of the things. And then also a drop in commodity prices that kind of just, we have our own views on that, which we'll talk about next week.
Yeah, it's very interesting when you think about the big swing that they're predicting with Democrats taking over Congress, and then even the possibility of a Bernie Sanders or another Democratic candidate winning instead of Trump. Because if you look historically, this is something we've discussed on our program in the past, if there isn't a recession 2 years before re-election, the incumbent almost always wins. So it'll be interesting this time if we don't see that recession. I mean, we haven't seen a recession yet. And if we don't see one materialize in 2020, then that would say, from a historical standpoint, odds are definitely in favor of Trump winning, because most cases, people vote their wallet, right? They vote according to how they feel, if their outlook is rosy, if their employment prospects are solid, if they're getting pay increases, right? All the things that you expect in an economy that continues to grow, then there's not as much of a need for radical change, right? And that's why the incumbent would likely win. So in this case, basically what they're saying, I believe this was Byron Wien and some of the other ones, is that climate change and some of the other political narratives, inequality, that those are going to be the things that are going to really motivate millennials, Gen Z, and the younger parts of the U.S. population to vote for a Bernie Sanders or a Democratic candidate.
Yeah, because if you take a look at the major polls, Pew, Gallup, climate change, I think, is 15 on the list, with economy, medical up at the top of the list. So that would be interesting, because one of the things that we've seen lately, and especially this was true in the 2016 election, 2018 election, the different outcomes from what the polls are telling you is going to happen versus what actually happens at the ballot box. So this is one that's going to be a little bit hard to predict.
Well, Jim, I guess that wraps things up for the forecast 2020. When we look at the consensus and, of course, the outside the box forecast that we touched upon just right now. Next week, we're going to do forecast 2020, looking at our own view, some of the things that we're also implementing here at Financial Sense Wealth Management with our clients based on our outlook. So give us a preview of some of what you're going to discuss when we commence next week.
Well, it's going to be a big sea change. Our theme going forward is something I wrote back in 2003. I called it the next big thing. Our theme for next year, oil, copper, gold, and elections. And I'm going to basically discuss why, after being absent commodities markets for 7 years, we've returned to that market, including international, very much in different drivers than what we saw in the last decade or the decade before that in the new century. And so this was a theme I articulated in March of 2003 when I wrote The Next Big Thing. And our forecast is The Next Big Thing Part 2, Oil, Copper, and Gold, and Elections. That will be coming up next week. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris and I, we'd like to thank you for joining us here in this new year. We'll return next week with our own forecast and then with some new changes to the program I think you're going to enjoy as we share more and more of our inside research with you every other week here on the program. In the meantime, until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the